Good afternoon. It's Tuesday, the 7th of February, 2017, just after 1 o'clock. Welcome to UK Column News. I'm your host, Brian Gerrish, with me in the studio, of course, Mike Robinson. And we are going to be joined by live video Skype link by Vanessa Bealey. And, of course, the subject is fake news. And, well, the BBC still seems to be a little bit stuck. I had a look at their reality check webpage this morning. Seems to be stuck on the 1st of February, so reality has stopped for the BBC. But of course, Channel 4 has stepped in to become the big guardian of truth.
Yeah, perhaps the BBC just doesn't want to take Channel 4's thunder because, of course, last night was the beginning of Fake News Week on Channel 4 News, and they're doing some other programmes generally as well. One of the big stories they covered was from this guy, Andy Davies, who was asking, well, he was talking about a YouGov survey, which was asking whether people can identify fake news or not. He covered, the question had six stories that they were giving to people. One was, the headline was, immigrants to be given £8,500 upon arrival to boost economy. Was that real or fake? Was what they were asked. Tourist bitten by massive crocodile after trying to take a selfie. The third one in the survey was Iceland to host New Year's Eve party for asylum seekers. The fourth one was Essex villages, High Easter and Good Easter forced to change offensive names after complaints. The fifth one was Trump offering free one-way tickets to Africa, Mexico and those who want to leave America. The sixth one was Donald Trump picks millionaire oil boss with close links to Vladimir Putin as Secretary of State, and people had to decide whether those were real or fake. And this was the result that they announced. 4% correctly identified all true and fake stories, and 48% apparently thought that some fake news was true. So that's good. And they said that 50% were worried about fake news, and 66% believed that social media was not doing enough to tackle fake news. So basically what they're saying there, it seems to me, is that social media needs to do much more to tackle fake news. In other words, freedom of speech is not as important as censorship.
Yeah, this Channel 4 figure is skew, isn't it? It's skewing people's opinion towards the fact that social media should be controlling social media to get rid of the fake news. So that statement alone from Channel 4, in my mind, is deliberate spin of a figure.
Vanessa, welcome to the programme. What are your thoughts on Channel 4's Fake News Week?
Well, I mean, these figures, I actually saw them also last night, and actually I posted the 4% statement to Facebook, and I have to say, if we're talking about social media commentary, generally speaking, the commentary was, well, that's a good job for Channel 4 then, because if only 4% are going to recognise fake news, then Channel 4 have a good chance to continue producing fake news and not be recognised for it. So I think that was the general reaction from a huge number of commentators and analysts last night. So to some extent, I think this entire survey, as Brian pointed out, is one, it's skewed, but two, actually, it's making Channel 4 look a little bit ridiculous. I mean, these kind of fake news that they've produced as an example of fake news have been around for years. I mean, we've seen these sort of ridiculous fake news launches by The Sun, The Mirror, and so on for donkey's years. It's nothing new. But unfortunately, Channel 4 did not focus upon the very real fake news that is exacerbating the misery and suffering of people around the world, globally, particularly in Syria. Had they focused on that, I would have a lot more respect for this entire process that they're going through. But what we're seeing effectively is a massive campaign of damage limitation because of the exposure of the level of their criminal fake lies, particularly over Syria, for the last 6 years.
Well, damage limitation, but in a sense, they're actually admitting their own failure, aren't they? Because what they're saying is only 4% of people were able to identify the fake news out of these headlines. So what kind of job have they been doing all these years to educate people as to what is real and what isn't?
Exactly.
I'll just interject there, if I may, a little bit later in the news. We'll be having a look at what Channel 4's role is. Just bear that in mind, and I'll say to you, Vanessa, bear that in mind, because you don't know what's coming up. But I think people will be fascinated when they're actually told what the real role of Channel 4 is. Their words, not mine.
Well, this was one of the stories in the out of the six that were asked of people. Donald Trump picks millionaire oil boss with close links to Vladimir Putin as Secretary of State. This article talking about Rex Tillerson as a Secretary of State said Tillerson was awarded an Order of Friendship Medal by Putin himself after he brokered a major deal giving Exxon access to Russia's Arctic oil reserves. Now, I'm not suggesting that Tillerson does not have a fairly close relationship with Putin, but the suggestion here is that Tillerson was awarded an Order of Friendship. Therefore, he's some kind of special friend of Putin's. But the fact is, Putin gave this medal as president of Russia. Tillerson was given the medal because he has a long-standing relationship with Russia from a business perspective. And I mean, frankly, if you actually look at the list of the people that have been given, foreigners that have been given the Order of Friendship, it includes the cousin of the Queen. So it's not such a rare thing. And that, in fact, he was given that by the then president of Russia, who was Medvedev. It's Prince Michael of Kent.
Yep.
And also Rowan Williams has been given, who was ex-Archbishop of Canterbury, has been given the Order of Friendship. So this is not anything particularly unusual. It's not uncommon for the president to give this award. And the way that it was, it's not the fact of the fact that the medal was given and that Tillerson has a relationship of some kind with Putin. It's the way that was presented by the Mirror and others, which to my mind, and please, if somebody has a different view, tell me, would classify that as a fake story, even though it's considered by the survey as being true.
It's spun. I think is the right description, because it's factually correct, but the way it's presented is designed to deceive.
Right.
It's a spun story.
Absolutely. So other things on Channel 4 News last night, fake news in Trump's America. And Vanessa, did you watch the fake news debate with these four clowns? The gentleman on the right, I can't remember his name offhand, but he was speaking. He is running a satirical news site, and he was complaining bitterly that since the campaign for fake news appeared with Trump, that he is somebody who has generally had a very positive feedback on his satirical website, but now he's getting all kinds of abuse and he's blaming Trump for it. But there's a certain amount of desperation in everything that they're doing here.
Unfortunately, I couldn't get this to play, whether it's something to do with my being in France or whether I have computer gremlins at the moment. I don't know, but I couldn't actually get this particular segment of the program to play. So unfortunately, I've not had the I'm not quite sure what I would call it. I've not had the pleasure of watching it.
Okay.
Can we just put a bit of comment in there? Because
Absolutely.
We did see it, a little bit of these individuals. What I'd like to know is how they were selected. How did these four individuals come to be chosen to be interviewed as part of this debate? Because what I picked up from them was not intellectual comment. Certainly one individual seemed to be extremely biased in the way he was coming across.
It was all extremely biased, absolutely. Now, Vanessa, Padraig O'Brien, he has been covering a lot of Syrian stories in the past months, and you have had some personal communications with this gent.
Very interesting. When, it was in November, around the middle of November, that Al Jazeera produced a film that they claimed had been taken inside a hospital in East Aleppo that was a premature baby unit. Now, immediately, my response to that, and to Padraig O'Brien, I think it was on Twitter that I sort of flagged it up initially, that the main hospitals, the seven hospitals, three main ones, four private health clinics in East Aleppo had effectively been taken over by Nusra Front Al-Qaeda and by various other terrorist and militant factions, including the Children's Hospital that had actually been converted into a Sharia court and a prison. So effectively was no longer being used as a children's hospital. And of course, now after the liberation, we know that none of these hospitals were being used to treat civilians. So my original tweet went out to Parikh saying, okay, you know, where is this hospital that you're claiming has been bombed? Where is this premature baby unit? Have you verified your sources? I mean, standard questions to ask a media outlet that is publishing a story without any apparently verified sources. So he then commenced to contact me on email. And he, in fact, was pushing me to say to him what I thought this hospital actually was and why I thought it was not a verified story. Now, despite my asking him time and time again to let me know how he has verified that this is an existing hospital, that this is a genuine, legitimate, credible piece of footage from Al Jazeera that, by the way, is also known for falsifying evidence. It's been known for falsifying evidence since its creation by, of course, Qatar, which has a vested interest in the terrorist forces inside Syria. And right at the end of this conversation, I mean, basically, of course, Parikh O'Brien did not fundamentally answer one of my questions, other than to say to me at the end in a very sort of dismissive manner, that did I really think that this entire incubator story had been falsified, and dismissing it. And of course, my response was, of course, that's never happened before, has it? There was never the false incubator baby story that generated the genocide of the Iraqi people, was there, Parikh? Of course, after this, there was no reply back from him.
Vanessa, did Parikh O'Brien make the statement that this was a hospital?
Yes.
So how did he explain where he says here, "Hi, Vanessa, I don't know whether the facility is an official list of hospitals or not. I suppose the question is, if it's not a hospital, what do you think it is? I'd be interested in pursuing what you said about rebels and so on." But all the way through this conversation, he doesn't seem quite so confident.
No, he doesn't. And it's almost as if he wants me to justify my statement while he, as I said, he's clearly unable to verify his sources and verify the information that he is putting out there that this is a hospital. And that, to be honest, that's the pattern of the Channel 4 reporting. They're unable to verify many of the reports. And I have an entire list that I have compiled that is going to be exposed during this week, that they are focusing on fake news. We are going to be focusing on the Channel 4 fake news, particularly in Syria. So thank you, Channel 4, for giving us this opportunity to further expose the criminal lies that you have been disseminating, particularly regarding Syria.
I'll just add a little bit on this subject. I think what you're seeing is raw arrogance from this man. Mm. He believes that because he is speaking with the backing of Channel 4, you should automatically believe him. This is very common, of course, with the BBC journalists. Rank arrogance. I am BBC. I am speaking. Therefore, it must be true. We've got some very interesting research which has just come to light. We're working on, but we'll be coming out over the next few days, and some of it's very much in your field because it's a critique of the sources that the BBC has been using when they've been reporting in the Middle East. And in one of these papers, it's pointing out that the BBC was relying on sources which were predominantly French, for which there was no proper check on the provenance of the information, the accuracy of the information. And the BBC was being hit very hard in a professionally argued paper about these sources. And what's interesting about the paper is that the originator of this was themselves very close to the BBC. So it's not as if somebody external was criticising the BBC. What we're getting a glimpse of is people, in fact, inside the BBC who were getting deeply concerned about the fact the BBC was prepared to use completely unchecked sources to report what was happening in war zones.
Okay, well, this was Padraig O'Brien's report. Sorry, heavy bombing forces Aleppo hospitals to close. You can find it on the Channel 4 website, I would imagine. I chose this still because it has young Omran on there. We'll come on to that in a second. And in that, I believe I'm correct in saying this, Vanessa, that in that report, he was mentioning this report from Al Jazeera with the baby in the incubator. So just give us a little bit more on this.
Well, I mean, this was extraordinary because actually this was the video that Padraig was discussing with me. So there were two points about this video. One, I don't know if you can just freeze that there.
I can't, I'm afraid.
Okay. But I would like the viewers to very quickly watch how this woman is handling this supposedly living baby. Okay. That is very important in this piece of footage. Now, Padraig, there were two things. One was the existence of this so-called official hospital or unofficial hospital, as he eventually said it probably was. And the second and most important point from me, and this is a very important point to make about Channel 4, they did this fact-check attack on Ava Bartlett after she spoke at the UN, and she described the recycling of the photographs of children in the various propaganda organizations like the White Helmets, like Aleppo Media Center. She made a valid point. Channel 4 have honed in on that point and attacked her for that, while in fact, in my opinion, creating smoke and mirrors to hide the fact that they are endorsing the exploitation of children for propaganda purposes, which will eventually kill more children. This is the criminal aspect, the child exploitation aspect of the Channel 4 reporting. Now, if we go back to this baby, Mike, I pointed out to Padraig, I actually said to him, do you have a wife? Do you have children? Because if you do, you know that you do not hold, particularly a premature baby like this, like a rugby ball. One. Two, that baby's head does not even move. Its limbs do not move. I've had four independent doctors watch that video and tell me that that baby has rigor mortis. It's dead. Now, in Padraig O'Brien, in the Channel 4 report on this, they have actually taken out that segment, that suspect segment. And the only segment, then they've edited it and they've put it back together with the baby being given alive back to its mother. Now, this is complete, utter, I can't even describe it, criminal exploitation using children as props for propaganda, dead children. I mean, I can't absolutely 100% verify. I have not seen that baby's body, but it is very clearly stiff and not moving. So in one way or another, I believe that that baby had been dead for some time before it was used. And if you actually watch the Al Jazeera video, the commentator or the presenter from Al Jazeera says, are you okay? Are you okay? And the nurse actually says, yes, the baby's okay. So they are pretending that this premature baby is alive and it is then given back to its mother at the end of the video. Now, the fact that Padraig O'Brien has even disseminated this video is utterly abhorrent. This, as I keep saying, is child exploitation, and Channel 4 are responsible for child exploitation to promote further war and bloodshed and killing of children inside Syria. It's as simple as that.
I was just going to add in there, Vanessa, that I hadn't seen that particular clip with the baby in the incubator, but I reacted to it very quickly. I remember many, many years ago being given a very young baby to hold, a baby of a friend of mine. And of course, when the baby was handed to me, I was instructed to put my hand under the baby's head because the baby's head is very heavy and their neck muscles are not capable of doing anything. That head would have dropped in the way that that woman was holding it. So I agree, either it was fake, it was not a real child, or, as you say, rigor mortis had set in. Whatever the case is, that piece of footage is theatre.
Well, of course, let's talk about the exploitation of children. And here's another short piece of video here, because we'll all recognise this particular child. being set in a chair for photographs to be taken. Vanessa, this is a pretty obscene exploitation of a child.
Absolutely.
Now, I don't know whether this child is actually in pain at that point with a genuine injury or whether that is makeup. But nonetheless, he certainly looks at the very least bewildered.
Mm. I mean, again, yeah, this is an absolute criminal case of child exploitation. I mean, I actually saw this piece of video for the first time a couple of days ago. I hadn't seen it previously, where they're actually placing the child on the chair and then withdrawing in order not to allow paramedics to come in and treat the child, which you would think would be a priority in a war zone with bombs falling all around them. You'd think there would be some sort of urgency, not this delay to wait to treat the child or to get the child out of the area, a delay to allow the photographer Mahmoud Raslan to take the very posed photographs that then were circulated globally to all of the mainstream outlets. And we know then that Omran became, if you like, the poster boy for further intervention for no-fly zones inside Syria. So yes, I mean, cynical exploitation and child abuse.
So Mahmoud Raslan here, highlighted by Channel 4 again, and in this particular video clip, he's saying, Omran was not the first child I filmed, so I was surprised when his picture spread so widely. But Vanessa, the BBC then, a couple of weeks ago on the media show, were highlighting a photographic event. And they specifically asked the two people promoting this event, which was highlighting the best photo images, photojournalism images of 2016, 2017, 2016, I suppose. And they were asking the two ladies promoting this event what they thought about the Omran image. Did the fact that the video appeared to suggest that the image was staged, did that discredit the image at all? And they just simply said, from a photojournalism point of view, absolutely not. But there's no mainstream journalist can shout fake news at anybody if they feel that type of staging is appropriate.
I mean, it's extraordinary, isn't it? I mean, it was actually the Getty Award for the defining image or the most arresting image. I can't remember. I think defining image of 2016. And actually Harding, the BBC presenter, did actually ask the question, well, as you said, if this image had been staged and there are suspicions that it was staged, does that detract from it winning the prize? And as you rightly say, Bert Lynch of Getty Images immediately said no. But what is interesting is that her point why that didn't discredit the prize giving was because she had absolute faith in this photographer, in this photojournalist, Mahmoud Raslan. Now, Mahmoud Raslan has been proven to be associated with Nour al-Din Zinki, yet again, this group of extremists funded and armed by the United States, who beheaded the 12-year-old Palestinian child Abdullah Issa. Mahmoud Raslan has basically been photographed taking selfies, or rather he photographed himself, taking selfies with Nour al-Din Zinki fighters. And again, coming back to Channel 4, Mike, Channel 4 actually showcased Nour al-Din Zinki, if we remember, in their program Up Close with the Rebels, which they immediately withdrew as soon as they realized that perhaps more than 4% of the public recognized fake news. And they basically did an entire program featuring not only Nour al-Din Zinki, the beheaders themselves, the executors themselves, but also including the White Helmets in that footage. So the White Helmets were alongside the Nour al-Din Zinki beheaders. So Mahmoud Raslan, that Getty Images describe as a reliable photojournalist, is in fact another terrorist affiliate. And this is the issue that we now have, is that we are realizing, many of us realized before, but the liberation of Aleppo, of course, has broken apart this firewall that was being used by the mainstream media to disguise the fact that they are basically basing their entire narrative upon testimony from Al-Qaeda and other extremist group affiliates.
Yes. Okay. Well, look, we're going to do a little bit more on Channel 4 in a second. Mm. But before we do that, we'll just mention that you are speaking on Friday, the 17th of February, in Bristol at the ARC, which is in 27 Broad Street. Starts at 7 p.m. And the title of the talk is Fall or Liberation, the Unraveling of BBC Fake News this time.
Yeah. Yeah, if people want to come along, that would be great. Actually, an opposition member has actually tried to create an event to disrupt my speaking event. So it would be great if people could come along just to support and also to hear a testimony from the Syrian people themselves regarding how they felt about the liberation of Aleppo.
Okay, thank you for that. Now, we're going to have a look, more of a look at Channel 4 then.
Yes, and it's been really interesting. Firstly, I'd like to thank the lady who yesterday and today has given us a lot of information, which allowed us to do some digging on Channel 4, which we probably couldn't have done otherwise. I didn't know much about Channel 4. We've got quite a bit here, and this hopefully is going to give some of our audience and viewers and listeners the chance to do some research themselves. So let's bring in Channel 4. So this is a public service TV broadcaster, formerly subsidiary of the Independent Broadcasting Authority, but it's now owned by the Channel 4 Television Corporation. Now, this is research that we've done this morning. People have anything to add, or perhaps some of this needs slightly correcting, please tell us. But what we're doing here is starting to take the lid off Channel 4. It's a public corporation of the Department for Culture, Media and Sport. Now, this was something that surprised me, because the moment I got to that, I thought, my goodness, what we're actually looking at is a television channel which is run by the British government. Well, you might say that's a bit harsh. We'll see. Channel 4 handles the advertising for UK TV. Now, let's remember that one of the criticisms that's been thrown against so-called alternative media is these nasty fake news people only want to make money out of advertising. But here's Channel 4 making millions and millions and millions out of advertising. But of course, it doesn't apply to Channel 4 that they might skew the news to make more money from advertising. Well, UK TV Networks is a joint venture. Who's involved with that? Well, don't worry, because, of course, it's trustworthy and independent, because BBC Worldwide is a mere 50% stakeholder. And Scripps, which is a US pay TV company, which seems to own vast amounts of American media, is the other shareholder. And it's the same Scripps that let it be known a little while ago that they consider buying Channel 4 if put up for sale. And if you want to read about that, The Guardian reported that in March 2016.
But just to clarify, BBC Worldwide is the commercial arm of the BBC.
Yes, although it is close enough to sort of benefit from pension pots and stuff like that. So it's sort of arm's length independent, but not quite.
Right.
There's a Guardian report there. Just to show you the front cover, this is all about Channel 4. But one of the quotes which I found interesting was, "We're not in the business of acquiring platforms and networks," said Mark Endemano, General Manager, Disney Media Organization for Europe, Middle East and Africa. "We love Channel 4 as a partner. We'd love to see it continue in good health." So I haven't quite tracked this one down, but there we've got Disney clearly in bed with Channel 4 in one way or another. But Vanessa, this is the bit I referred to earlier, because when we have a look at what's going on here, there's a wonderful revolving door of executives moving back and forth from UK TV and Channel 4 and BBC. Independent, I don't think so. Well, if anybody's saying, well, this can't be true, let's have a look at what Channel 4 says. This is the page for its corporate responsibility. And what is this organisation designed to do? You may be surprised, because here it is. The mission is to promote social, environmental and personal change. It's nothing about reporting news or truth or facts. This is a propaganda machine which has one mission, their words, not ours, which is to change everything around us. Now, I don't remember anybody voting for Channel 4 to do this, Mike.
No.
No. So what's the quality of Channel 4's thinking? Well, we could go to another one of their documents. Here we are. At the top there, we've got a gentleman. He is part of the Arts Council. And he says, Channel 4 is the gift in the oyster. It's the antidote to the BBC. And you wouldn't find anyone else doing what they do in the UK. I'm starting to laugh here because, of course, you're going to see in a minute that Channel 4 is nothing about being an antidote to the BBC. It is the partner of the BBC, and the executives share arrangements between them. I'll bring you in a second, Vanessa. This is a bit more of their information, and this one should expand a bit here. So on the left, we've got BBC, and next to it, we've got Channel 4. Don't worry, these are sort of publicly funded publicly funded public service companies. The BBC is put on its own, but as we're going to see in a minute, Channel 4, it's very devious how this company works. So I don't believe UK Column. Go and have a look at their own documentation. This is a downloadable booklet which gives information about Channel 4. So stay with me because it gets pretty good here. Definition of public corporations, that is what it is called. It is controlled by central government, local government, or other public corporations. So Channel 4 is controlled by the British government. If you want to get into that a little bit more, here's Channel 4's corporate governance statement. And I've said at the top, it's nearly £1 billion worth of channel. I think it's about 970 million, but it's really controlled by the government. And why can we say that? Well, the non-executive members are appointed by Ofcom following consultation with Channel 4 chair and the approval of the Secretary of State for Culture, Media and Sport. The chair is appointed by Ofcom for a fixed term with the approval of the Secretary of State for Culture, Media and Sport. The chief executive is appointed by the board, and other executive members are appointed to the board after nomination by the chief executive and the chair, acting jointly. The board secretary is appointed jointly by the chair and chief executive.
This is like yes, Minister Brian.
Vanessa, perhaps we just bring you on screen. I've got some more. We're laughing about this, but it's. I was going to say this is a dog's breakfast, and I was prompted to say this because a number of our viewers this afternoon can see a glimpse, I think, of your dog on the couch behind you. So Channel 4 stands up. It claims to be independent, but actually its mission is to change everything about our society. Nothing to do with news reporting, nothing to do with the truth, nothing to do with factual reporting. And who is controlling it? Ofcom and the Secretary of State. I mean, we don't have to make this up. All we've done is a bit of reasonable journalism to show that Channel 4 doesn't have a leg to stand on when it's criticising or pointing the finger at other channels. Because I think it's deceitful that Channel 4 doesn't stand up and say, actually, we're controlled by the British government, and therefore we're just another BBC.
Yeah.
Have a look at the people, because here it gets even better. So this is one of the non-executive members. We've got Rowley Keating. He's a very relaxed individual. And it says here, Rowley joined, he was part of the British Library. Mike's interesting. This is the man who ran the Magna Carta display. We'll come on to that another time with the British Constitution Group. But it says Rowley joined the Library after a long and successful career as a programme maker and broadcasting executive at the BBC, where he played key roles in the launch of UK TV. What a surprise. As its first head of programming and BBC4 as its launch controller in 2002, before moving on to become controller of BBC2 and the director of archive content, with editorial oversight of BBC's online services, including the BBC iPlayer. So no vested interest there. And we better make sure there's some more in case people think we're making this up. Now we're on to the executive directors. And, well, the top man, he's of course, a UK TV executive. He was formerly chief executive of the UK TV. So that's a revolving door change of jobs. And then we've got this young lady down here. Before joining Channel 4, Jay Hunt was controller BBC One. She initially joined the BBC in 1989. 1994, she goes to Newsnight. And then eventually she's controller of BBC Daytime. But they're all totally independent. Does that make you feel better, Vanessa, at the quality of Channel 4's reporting?
Well, I mean, you know, thank you for that. That was a kind of a fascinating walk around inside the psyche of Channel 4. And it explains a huge amount. As you said previously in the report today, it explains the arrogance of the members of Channel 4 when challenged. I mean, I've had a running kind of battle with Alex Thompson on Twitter for some time now. And his default position is always to an arrogant, we know better than you as far as journalism is concerned, position. And so what I find extraordinary, though, Brian, if we actually look, and I was watching a report this morning on RT about the fact that the Sunday Times phoned all of the advertising sales companies and warned them that there might be a problem if they continue advertising on RT, because RT is a propagandist for Kremlin. You know, we're seeing this smear campaign against RT, and yet Channel 4 is being a complete hypocrite in this case, because you've just clearly demonstrated that there are very few media outlets that could be more state-run and not focused on media than Channel 4, and yet they are projecting the crimes that they are committing against journalism onto RT, who's doing a way better and a way more objective job than they are of presenting the news.
And they're very worried, which is why we're seeing this backlash, I think.
Yes, and we should just put the usual disclaimer in. Of course, the Alex Thompson that Vanessa was referring to is not is not the Alex Thompson which will be on the news tomorrow. So,
yes.
So on this news program tomorrow, yes. Okay.
Well, I thought we'd give you some more, Vanessa, because we're not going to let Channel 4 get away so easily. So I took a little look this morning at the journalist Andy Davies, who, of course, was the man who featured in the programme. Most of his Twitter is to do with sport. There's a bit of realistic journalism, but he's very keen on sport. But I found this series of tweets, which I did not get a good feeling about. It starts at the bottom, Cardiff Crown Court. This is the trial of a footballer who was accused of rape. So he says, Cardiff Crown Court, Ched Evans called to give evidence in his defence. He denies rape. And then running up the page on your screen are the tweets, which appear to be coming out of the court. I believe he was in court tweeting at the time. But this is a series of tweets about graphic sexual matters. I did not get a comfortable feeling about this. And it went on. I encourage people to go to his Twitter page, of course, where you can find this and read it yourself. It was almost as though he was enjoying tweeting out this very graphic sexual content and no real analysis of what was going on. Now, I want to emphasize this point because this is the man saying we Channel 4 are the ones that do the investigative journalism. It actually took The Sun to really get to grips with this story. And if you go and find this article, 10 Things to Know About Ched, barrister separates fact from fiction after footballer was acquitted of rape at his retrial. And this is a very comprehensive article with comment from the barrister where he asks a question and then he responds to it. So Ched Evans has been proved innocent, right? Wrong. You'd be forgiven for thinking this, given that it was in the prepared statement read out by a solicitor, but Ched Evans has not demonstrated his innocence. This is not how our criminal justice system operates. It's not a means by which the truth of a situation or event is conclusively and fully determined. Rather, the jury are asked one simple question. Are you sure that the prosecution has proved its case beyond reasonable doubt? Now, I can't go through this in detail because we haven't got time. The point I'm making is the Sun newspaper is doing proper analysis on the case, while this journalist seems to be enjoying sitting in court, tweeting out. There's something...
sordid details.
Sordid, sordid. And it's almost as though he's laughing when he's putting these tweets out. Now, I'll give another example of the sort of thing that he's tweeted. This is about the Abafan disaster. So this is going back to October 2006. And he's put a piece of text from the...
2016.
I beg your pardon, 2016. This is a section of the Disaster Tribunal Inquiry Report, which was originally published in 1967. And you can read it yourself, you freeze it on the screen. But what I picked up is this, is that in it is a statement that we reject out of hand Mr. Akner's observation that what has been revealed here is a callous indifference by senior National Coal Board officials to the fears of a tip slip expressed to them. Callousness betokens villainy. And in truth, there are no villains in this harrowing story. So you're led to believe that this is something else. And down the bottom, it says, not villains, but decent men led astray by foolishness or by ignorance or by both in combination. So people were telling senior members of British Coal Board that they had fears the tip was going to slip. They said those alerting statements were callously dismissed. Now, if we go to the Telegraph, which reported on the death of this man, because he was Lord Akner, the former Lord of Appeal, he was intimately involved in the case. And we can read what he had to say down at the bottom. He said this, to those who criticise the length of this inquiry, Akner began his final address, I would reply that if they had dug with their own hands for their own children, they would recognise with bitter clarity the need for the closest scrutiny of every detail to ensure that this should never happen again. A combination of callous indifference, incompetence, ignorance and inertia in the National Coal Board has caused the disaster, argued Akner. It was also little short of a public scandal that there had been no retraction of an untrue statement by the NCB chairman, Lord Robbins, that no one could have known there was a spring at the heart of the tip. So if we see the way Channel 4 has flippantly reported on Syria and the true undertone of what's going on, we get a reflection, I believe, of that in this journalist's very casual portrayal of something as being true in one direction on his Twitter page, when in fact the truth was in a completely different direction.
Yes.
Can I
yes,
just very
Vanessa?
Quickly interject something there as well? I'm just coming back to Alex Thompson of Channel 4, not Alex Thompson who of UK Column. But three things very quickly I want to make that point on, that I completely agree with you. This flippancy and dismissal of any alternative argument to what Channel 4 is presenting. One, as Alex Thompson back in October, when people were presenting him with alternative facts and photographic evidence of something that was negating a Channel 4 report, he dismissed it as saying, if there is relevant information, but not information from pro-Assad whiners. So immediately anybody that was presenting a different or an alternative approach or based on investigative journalism to him was dismissed as pro-Assad whiners. The second one was I was sent an email exchange between a member of the public and Alex Thompson in which the member of the public is presenting him with facts about the White Helmets. Now, Alex Thompson's response to that was, I'm quite happy to report on the White Helmets if I'm presented with evidence that shows that they are not credible. Now, hello, how much evidence would Channel 4 actually like to at least put in an element of doubt about whether the White Helmets are credible? They have never touched the White Helmets story. Why not? I think we know why not, but I'd like to ask them that question. And, you know, what I've seen recently, for example, when I presented Alex Thompson on Twitter with the testimony from the civilians that were leaving East Aleppo, he dismissed those testimonies, those Syrian people's testimonies, as, well, that's normal, my dear. It's a war zone. So, of course, they're going to change their narrative when they leave East Aleppo and they come into the government-controlled West Aleppo. And my point was, Sim, you're not there, Alex. How can you make that statement from London when you are not in Aleppo and none of your media moguls from Channel 4 are in Aleppo? You cannot make that statement. That's a dismissal of the universal suffering of the people that your propaganda has ensured has been maintained for the last 6 years. No response.
Yes. Okay, well, look, we'll just end on this one. This is from AFP. Now, AFP news agency tweeted this out this morning. Correction in capital letters. Please disregard these images that were posted inaccurately. This tweet will be deleted shortly. Now, AFP, of course, is one of the news agencies that many other... Oh, sorry. I do apologise.
It's all right. It's on screen now.
Yeah. This tweet will be deleted shortly. AFP, one of the news agencies that most of the mainstream media use as a source. And I was particularly interested in one of the responses here, which said to AFP, please leave the erroneous tweets. Reply to them with corrections. Would be more journalistic. Thanks. Now, I don't believe they did that. They deleted the mistake that they made. But again, particularly in the current news environment where fake news is so high up the agenda at their own doing, not it's not something that anybody else is driving. The mainstream media is driving this campaign themselves. You would think, Vanessa, just as a final word, you would think that they would be a little more careful.
You would think so, but I think what we're seeing demonstrated now is the sheer arrogance of these organizations. They're well funded, they're well protected. They consider themselves to be impervious to criticism and impervious to public opinion. Well, we need to prove them wrong, and I think we are proving them wrong. And this is their, let's say, this is their swan song. The fake news campaign that they're all waging at the moment is going to backfire horrendously on all of them.
I would totally agree with that. I think this is one of the most important pieces of evidence we've got that people power can achieve things, because at the end of the day, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people can react within a matter of minutes over social media. Whereas in a massive news organisation like the BBC, even if they've got a team of several hundred people doing their job, ultimately the work of those individuals has got to be passed to higher managers for approval. And they are always going to be slow. They're always going to be behind the curve. And secondly, I'd also like to remind viewers and listeners that, of course, we've got the House of Commons committee looking at fake news at the moment. And we've already flagged up with one of their managers that they're only asking about alternative media fake news. There's nothing in their terms of reference at the moment to say, well, should they also be looking at fake news in the BBC, Channel 4 and other large commercial media outlets. Mm. So here is the opportunity for people to write in, to raise concerns with that committee and to say, basically, you're conducting a skewed investigation because you're only looking at alternative media sources. You're not looking at the BBC, for example, or Channel 4, as we've seen today.
Yep.
That's it,
that's
I think.
It, yeah.
OK, well, Vanessa, as always, thank you very much for joining us. And we'll just say thank you to all our viewers and supporters. Thank you for those who've made donations over recent days. Thank you, Glastonbury, I'll add in there. And we'd like to encourage more people to sign on and take out a subscription, because, of course, this eases how we can plan ahead with these things. So if you're not a subscriber, please consider taking out a UK column subscription. That's it for today. We will be back at the same time tomorrow. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.